Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. This hour, we're airing highlights from our February Get Lit with All of It virtual book club event. We selected a novel by an exciting debut author. Matteo Ascarapore was still working in sales at a tech startup when he decided to try his hand at writing. Though the first few attempts fell flat, Matteo finally found his groove, satirizing an experience he was quite familiar with, being a person of color working in startup culture. The result of Matteo's efforts is the New York Times bestselling novel Black Buck. Our protagonist is Darren, a young black man from Bed-Stuy who graduated as valedictorian of Bronx Science, but didn't end up going to college. Instead, he works as a manager at a Starbucks. Darren is happy with his life. He lives with his mother and the brownstone she owns. He has great friends, an amazing girlfriend named Soraya. But one day, his life is forever changed when he manages to convince a guy named Rhett to buy a drink that was different than his usual order. Well, turns out Rhett is the CEO of New York's hottest tech startup, and suddenly Darren has a job offer. What Darren doesn't know is that the startup, a kind of therapist-for-hire program called Someone, is all white. The kind of place where employees say he looks like Sidney Poitier, Malcolm X, Drake. You get the idea. Darren is the first employee of color. He is hazed. He's asked ridiculous questions. And one executive named Clyde, kind of a preppy guy, you know the type, really has it out for Darren. In order to find success at his new career, Darren transforms himself into Buck, a ruthless salesman persona willing to do anything to close a deal, even if it costs him his relationships that mean the most to him. When tragedy strikes at home and disaster comes for the company Someone, Darren decides to put his sales skills to another use. He hatches a plan to help people of color infiltrate sales forces across America. He calls the group Happy Campers. Black Buck is part satire, part self-help book, and an entirely entertaining read. Our readers had some really great questions from Matteo, which you'll hear at the end of this interview. But first, I kick things off by asking Matteo why he decided to pursue writing.
Well, for me, it was a necessary outlet. I mean, I've always loved the written word. I've been a huge supporter of literature throughout my whole life. That came to me from my mother and my grandmother, who used to be an English teacher in Jamaica. She taught me how to read. She was making me read Clifford the Big Red Dog, Franklin, Frog and Toad, all of that. But throughout my life, you know, I'd return back to the written word here and there. But when I was in the world of startups and sales, I was just so in it. I was deeply embedded, and it was sales and the company I was working at 24/7. So when I became disillusioned with that world, I turned back to writing. And at first I was writing articles and essays about startups and sales. And it was later in the year of 2016 when I turned to fiction. And I realized that for me, fiction was a specific form of salvation. It's a little cliche to say, but it's like the definition of a passion. When you're doing it and you don't realize that hours are passing by, that's what happened to me with writing. So when I left my job in 2016, I decided to pursue it full time. And at first, you know, one manuscript didn't work, second manuscript didn't work. And fortunately, Black Buck did, because there's a world, Allison, where I'm working on like my 11th manuscript and I'm not here with you.
Well, you did have a few drafts of Black Buck.
Oh,
I know that before you sort of landed it. What were those initial drafts like? What was the crafting? What did you do to move it forward?
Great question. Yeah, the first draft was long as hell. It was 168,000 words. I mean, that's like 50 or 100 pages less than Moby Dick. Come on, what was I doing? And that's partially because I don't have a formal writing background. I wasn't disciplined on the page, but there was a lot of energy and I was free. And I wasn't afraid to come to the page with energy and imagination. But at the core, the novel has stayed the same, about a young man, you know, being given an opportunity and then chasing a very American version of success, you know, money, power, and status, and showing how he had to pay a cost. And that's reflective of a cost that many of us have to pay.
So I'm curious, before we dive into the characters, the title, Black Buck.
Yep.
All right, so we know Darren becomes Buck. They're Starbucks. But Black Buck is also a slur.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Was there ever any pushback on the title?
Yeah, there was. Not a lot, but if there was like, can you talk to us a little bit about it? Can you illuminate, you know, your thinking behind it? So you mentioned two of the four meanings. There's, of course, the historical context that you just alluded to, where for those who are listening who don't know, you know, the black buck was the enslaved male who the enslavers believed was unruly, untamable. It's going to burn down the plantation, steal the women and the animals and so forth. Mm-hmm. So I chose that title because Buck, especially towards the end of the book, he is not burning down these corporations, but he is burning down what they stand for and redefining what it means to work in America and especially be one of the few, if not the only one, in these workplaces. Mm-hmm. And it also touches on the concept of wealth inequality and black people generating some wealth, or black bucks. So the pushback I got was, some people feel uncomfortable with the title. Can you just tell us why you chose it, what it means to you, even outside of the historical context? And once I explained, that was enough.
Let's talk about Darren. When we meet Darren, he's got a good life. He's got a lovely girlfriend. He's got his mom. He's got his neighborhood. He's all good. He's got a good job. What is it that day that makes him reverse sell Rhett?
If you ask me to psychoanalyze Darren, it's that he was constantly being told that he had an immense amount of potential, but that he wasn't living into it. Mm-hmm. And then he saw one of his old high school classmates on the train, Adriana, and she's saying that she's just about to go for a job interview, and he has, you know, his Starbucks apron in his backpack. And then this man walks in who Darren sees all the time, but something just went off. It's like, you know, I don't know if it's exactly divine intervention, but, you know, there are moments when we just do something that's out of character. We take a leap, and sometimes we don't know why. And that's what happens. And it just throws him into a whirlwind of a world that he was unfamiliar with, and it was just completely unexpected to him.
You had to create this world of someone.
Yes.
First of all, how did you decide what industry it would be that the app would deal with? And two, how'd you come up with the name? I mean, whenever I was watching Silicon Valley, it would crack me up. I'm like, Hooli, all these, like, they get so close, you know?
Yeah,
drop a couple of vowels here and there. But I'm sort of curious, like, someone and what it was about.
For me, I mean, to answer both of your questions, it came from an idea I actually had. Around 2012, I was walking to a friend's apartment in Alphabet City, and I was thinking about how they go to therapy and they really enjoy it, but they told me that they had to go through a few therapists in order to find the right one. So I said, what if traditional therapists trained in the West can't always reach people here? And vice versa, you know, in other people's countries. What if someone in India who is a follower of Hinduism, or someone who's a Muslim in Saudi Arabia or so forth, or someone who is Jewish in Israel, what if their different beliefs could reach someone over here, you know, because it's not traditional to the West? So I started jotting down notes, and I came up with the name Someone. I just thought that it'd be interesting, you know, someone there for you whenever you need them. And years later, when I left my job, I was like, I'm sort of burnt out. I don't want to build this company. And then years after that, when it was time to write my book or write Black Buck, I said, why don't I build this company, but on the page? And I built it to the point where I exposed all of its flaws to where this will never actually be a real company, you know?
So once Darren sort of gets sucked in to this company and becomes Buck, I'm curious, did you ever meet anybody that this happened to? Did you watch anybody go through a transformation like this?
Yeah, I meet this person every day when I look in the mirror. Yeah, this is part of my experience where I worked at this startup. I got caught up like Darren. And again, I'm not Darren, but I got caught up and I started distancing myself from the people who love me unconditionally, my family, my best friends. I had this mentality of, you don't get it. You don't understand. We're changing the world through selling XYZ, which really wasn't. And I felt as though we were curing cancer, which we weren't. So I fell into the term or phrase that we have now because of Get Out, the sunken place. And I had to awaken myself and with the help of others, wake up out of it.
So we asked folks to weigh in on our Instagram polls. You did as well. You cast your vote. We asked you and our readers by the end of the book if they ultimately forgave Darren for turning his back on his family and his girlfriend and all of his friends. You voted yes on forgiveness, along with 39% of our readers. 61% of our readers.
I thought this was confidential.
61% said no, they do not forgive Darren.
Wow.
So, you know, as you're writing Darren and Buck, we need to have feelings for him again, whether or not we forgive him or not. We need to have some sort of feeling for him at the end of the book. As you were writing it, how did you figure out how to do that? Because he does some pretty awful stuff.
He does. Well, it started with the beginning, showing Darren in his home with his mother, with his girlfriend, with his best friend, so that you see who he was before the big opportunity, before the transformation. And Darren, in my opinion, is a good person who made bad choices. And I'm using that word very specifically, not poor choices. He made bad choices. He did some terrible things and he hurt people. And he was also hurt at times, especially when he was in the workplace. So while I know that many readers dislike Darren for the majority of the book because of how he changes, I believe that they still stick with him and give him the benefit of the doubt that, you know, we should all receive the benefit of the doubt, you know, to be able to redeem ourselves. By the end, I'm hoping that the reader has invested enough that they want to see it through, and however they perceive Darren is on them. That's not my place to judge.
We did another Instagram poll, is what we do as we get ready for the big event. And we asked our readers if they thought Rhett actually cared about Darren.
Ooh.
71% said no.
Wow.
29% said yes. But there's complexity in the relationship.
Let's get it.
I mean, even when everything goes wrong between them, Darren says, "Still, I loved him with all I had. He gave me the greatest gift in the world, one I can now give to others, an opportunity." You know, what's the glue? What's the attraction between these two men?
There's a lot. There's the fact that Rhett really believed in Darren, or Darren felt as though Rhett really believed him. We can see that there might have been ulterior motives, you know, that Rhett had. And we saw Rhett do some things like use Darren as a human shield on Rise and Shine America. And when Darren ceased to be an asset to the business, Rhett betrayed him, right? But Darren really believes that Rhett believed in him and that Rhett cared for him and that Rhett loved him. And I believe it too. So I think that is the glue. When someone gives you an opportunity and say that you have the ability to move mountains or change the world in ways that you haven't before, it's hard to completely forsake that person or give up on them. There's also the fact that they went through adversity together. But what we see in a lot of these startups is that it's contrived adversity, that where we have this mission to change the world and there's this competition or the world is against us, right? It's really artificial, but when you're in it, it's very real. It's very real. So they were in that together too, you know?
Let's bring in Clyde. Clyde is more of a clear-cut villain, a bad guy. And for all of his racism and for all of his broness, there's this surprise at the end that he's been in a long-term relationship with a black man. Why did you want to introduce us to that part of his life?
No one's ever brought this up before, and I was thinking about this last night. I was like, why has no one ever brought this up? I'm not really sure. So I wanted to portray Clyde as three-dimensional, as a real individual, and not just this racist or this terrorizer, because it's very easy to classify him as such. We see Clyde consoling people when they think that they didn't hit their sales number. We see him hugging Rhett and crying, right? Mm-hmm. Clyde, I think, partially why he antagonizes Darren and treats him the way he does, it's not just because he's black, but because Darren becomes Rhett's favorite and Clyde's just actually hurt. But in terms of Clyde's relationship with this man, I wanted to show the complexity of an individual, whether they show it to other people or not.
I'm curious, when you were in Silicon Valley, how would you describe, there's different parts of the world and different businesses, the racism comes out in different ways.
Yeah.
How does it come out in tech startups?
Not a culture fit. When you hear not a culture fit, right? After an interview, or for someone who quit, or for someone who got fired, you have to ask yourself, what is the culture and why didn't they fit into it? Because there's a fine line between cult and culture. And in my experience, the people who aren't a culture fit are people who don't fit the norm in an organization, with many organizations with the norm being, you know, white male from a certain school, dressing a certain way, speaking a certain way.
So Darren Buck ends up treating the people around him so poorly. He ends up evicting Mr. Rawlings. He ends up beating the bleep out of his childhood friend. Some of our listeners had comments about them. One wrote, Darren hasn't figured out how to be Darren and Buck at the same time. Another said, Jason is part of Darren's past that he thinks he needs to break down so he could be Buck. Darren is breaking everything related to his past. Jason is the physical reminder of what that was.
Wow.
What are your
thoughts? One's big. That last one, I mean, I disagree with it, but I like that perspective, the metaphor there. My take is that Darren became someone else. It is not an alter ego. And to the first comment, I do agree with that, and that there's this duality, and he's just playing hopscotch between, you know, Darren in Bed-Stuy and then Buck in Manhattan, and Buck wins out. And we see it at one point in the scene with him and Soraya, where she walks out of the spa and he says, you know, F Darren, I'm Buck. So I think it's just a conscious choice. And I think that it's important for us to mention that these people in this book for majority of the time are young. Darren is 22, 23 for most of the time. Clyde's 24, 25. That's not to excuse the choices that they make, but they are young. And they're turning into fully formed adults right in front of our eyes. And
Let's take some listener questions, viewer questions. Betsy wants to know, why didn't Darren's mother tell him about her cancer?
Hey, Betsy. That's a good question. I mean, Ma explains it in the letter that she thought that she was doing Darren a service by shielding him from her illness so that he, while he was pursuing success at someone, wouldn't have to put that on hold, because she believed that he had already put his life on hold and staying home with her rather than going to college or pursuing a job other than Starbucks. So she just thought that she was protecting him in a way. And we see the consequences of that on Darren.
Lily has a question that I was going to ask, so we'll merge our questions. Why did Darren ask his early trainees to do things that were illegal?
Listen, again, going back, Lily, thank you for the question, but going back to Darren being young, he's just figuring it out, and ideas are popping into his head that he thinks are fun. Again, he had been through the ringer. He had put other people through the ringer. I think that he was just trying to spice things up and maybe scare off some of these inductees into the Happy Campers, thinking that they actually weren't built for it. Remember, Darren is really just trying to get Brian or 1SDR to serve Barry. And then the responsibility of helping other young black and brown people and other people of color is pushed onto him. And he realizes that that's a more noble mission.
I also thought that really addressed something that I've heard in more diversity and inclusion panels about in Silicon Valley. There's no pipeline. What about the pipeline is one of the big things they lean on. And Darren Bucks is like, well, here's your pipeline.
I'm gonna
build a pipeline.
Yeah, no, lack of a pipeline is just an excuse. I mean, it's lack of awareness and opportunity in these communities that they deserve a space in these places.
This is interesting. This is Marina. Hey, Mateo.
Hey.
I work in a superior court in an almost entirely white section of New Jersey and on the diversity committee. I used Black Buck to talk about racism in the workplace. Was this an intended message?
Hell yeah. Yo, Marina, thank you so much. That's incredible. People are telling me that they're actually reading this with their colleagues and it's having a real impact on the conversations they're having. I am so grateful. Thank you.
There's a debate going on in the chat right now about whether Darren and company are working within the system or changing it from the inside. And can you actually even do this? Should you build your own system?
I'm so happy that this comment or statement was made, because the book is somewhat incomplete by the end. The idea isn't just to fill all of these white-owned organizations with black and brown people, right? That will only take us so far. I think that some of those people, not all of them, because not everyone's about it, some of these people need to get the tools after working in these places and then create spaces for us and by us. Some people also like Jason won't even want to work in those other environments, and they'll want to work with other Black and Brown organizations and then uplift the community that way. There's no one way, but I'm really happy that this was brought up.
Rachel wants to know, says, thank you for this book, Mateo. I was wondering what responses you've had from former colleagues in the tech industry who have read the book.
Yeah. Rachel, listen, I've had a lot of people who I used to work with who say, wow, I thought you were writing about our company one for one, and you didn't, even though you did include some things. Great book. There have been other people who say, Mateo, I don't remember white paint being poured on you or this, that, and the other happening. What happened? Was that before I started with you at our last company? I'm like, no, this is that. Those parts are fiction. You don't have to worry about it. And then other people say that their eyes are being opened to things that go under the radar or they have never contended with because they are not a person of color, and that they have seen things happen and they wrote them off as jokes too. You know, or someone being overly sensitive, and that's opened up their eyes to all of that. So it's just a big win for me.
A lot of people want to know if there's any screen adaptation coming.
Listen, I can't say too much, but if and when it gets to the screen, it will be in the form of a TV show. Stay tuned for news.
Are you doing any writing?
Definitely. I'm working on another novel. I can't focus on it right now because it's just full promo with Black Buck. But yeah, another novel's in the works.
Those were highlights from my conversation with author Mateo Escarapore from our February Get Lit with All of It virtual book club event. We spent the month reading his New York Times best-selling novel, Black Buck. Up next, we'll hear from someone who has firsthand experience combating racism in the startup world and has ideas about how to make things better in Silicon Valley. Omni founder and former CEO Thomas McLeod shares his story after the break.